we've all become used, I think, since our awakening to the true nature of the administrative state that we find ourselves in, that the processes being exercised are far removed from those which seem to be our due as sovereign sentient men and women on planet Earth. But where is the origin of the due process? Are all claims against a man examinable in the so-called superior courts? And how do the various arenas we encounter relate to each other? In search of answers to these questions, Rob Ryder has spent a year and a half or so reading some of our older texts on the subject, including Blackstone's commentaries on English law. And tonight I'll be talking with Rob about his investigations, what he's found, and at least one man's interpretation of what it might all mean. To some extent, we're all beginners at this, especially your host, I must admit. And Rob is also, he's the first to admit that other answers and other ideas may be more applicable than ours. If the more seasoned TNS listeners have anything to offer, let us know via the chat box at tnsradio.com or at scottishsovereignsontheland.ning.com, and we'll add it to the mix. So are you there, Rob, my friend?
I am, Nick. Yes, I am. Thanks for having me.
That's all right. Thanks a lot for coming along. I guess the people in the chat box will let me know that our levels are all right, but it's all looking fine from here. You were telling me that your original sort of alternative interests were in, if you like, in the field of alternative energy. What sort of work were you doing there?
Well, my background was in power plants. I used to work at a nuclear power plant, and with the they call it the instrumentation and control system, the brain that runs the plant. So I learned a lot about logic circuits and you know how things work. But just my curiosity, because those are things that interested me, you know, when the internet came on and you could start finding all these YouTube videos and chat rooms and so forth, you know, I found things that were on energy that really interested me. Things like the Joe Cell, Victor Schauberger, Walter Russell, Wilhelm Reich and Oregon Energy, and, you know, all these different things that seem to be pulling the energy out of nowhere. And then to listen to people try to explain why it is or why it isn't without having done it themselves, you know, is always kind of comical. So I would just play with those things myself, and you know, while I never myself achieved them either, I learned a lot about, you know, how everything is really just based on charges. You got a charge of one kind here and a charge of another there, and you can somehow connect a circuit, you can make energy flow, because charges want to go back to zero. And so I was playing with that kind of stuff, Nick, and, you know, but I kept getting this damn mail, you know, you owe us this, you owe us this, you know, what about this? And I used to own my own business. I had 12 employees. We bought and sold printing presses. Mainly we would buy them from Europe, as a matter of fact, 2 or 3 year old, because the tax structures were different. Bring them back here to America, refurbish them, and resell them again. And so, you know, I had gone from all that down to where I had nothing left. You know, the business had gone away because all the printers had gone away, because all the businesses they printed for had gone away. And then you start learning, well, guess what? Your government gave them a tax credit to go to China, so, you know, and things like this, right?
Kind of the old thing of you're doing what you want to do, and slowly but surely the outside world encroaches upon you until it just, even though you've not changed your practices, it's no longer possible to do what you were doing.
That is exactly what it was, you know, it took a long time for me to come to grips with that, right? That, you know, really I hadn't done anything wrong, right? I kept looking for what I had done wrong in the business, and I should have done this different. No, really, I hadn't done anything wrong. They just changed the rules, and it really came down to the access to cash. You know, I don't want to call it cash, but that's what we call it, right? That to credit, so that a printer could buy another machine, and then that would put me to work, right? And somebody was controlling those strings, and again, from these same sites, you would see people talking about A for Bs, accepting for value and stuff. You know, you'd find all sorts of things posted, and I kind of got into it from the commercial side of things, that, you know, as they call it, trying to use the UCC and so forth. And
so your initial attempts were basically to defend yourself against that encroaching world, really, and see if you could find some way of limiting the financial damage it's doing to you.
Right, right, without really understanding at all what was going on, just that there was something wrong, you know. And And so, again, because of, you know, talks you on the internet and all these chat rooms and so forth, you get a lot of different people's opinions on things. But what I could see is that it didn't seem to matter what people tried. You know, they considered it a win when they went away for 6 weeks. You know, they got it dismissed, but they came back again, you know, and there were people in court for the third, fourth, fifth time, really for the same thing, you know. It just never went away. And so if the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over and expecting a different result, well, to me, that's kind of insane. There had to be a different answer. So a lot of that came, Nick, from, like, like you said, now you have a Black's Law Fourth or something like that, right? When you start looking at some of these dictionaries, you keep seeing this guy's name, Blackstone, showing up. And, you know, after they give you the definition, you know, Blackstone said this, Blackstone said that. Well, who the hell is he? You know, I don't know. Before 2 years ago, I didn't know anything about the law, you know, except to bow my head and pay the fine. That's what I knew. So I Googled Blackstone and found out he wrote these four books called the Blackstone's Commentaries on English and Welsh Law, or Laws of Wales, I think, or something like that. Mm-hmm. And when you first start reading it, he was in the 17th century, and it's been edited since, but a lot of it's in his words, and then there'll be interpretation. I call it now the read between the lines stuff, the fine print. What was he saying in the 17th century that we've changed the meaning of words now that it's better if it's said like this? Because one of the things he says is that the common law must be written in the common language of the time. And then you find out that not only him, but Lord Coke and a number of other scholars from the past, they were all probably chief justices of the King's Bench, if you were to go look at what title they had at one point. They wrote these books that are considered books of authority. And if you use these books of authority as evidence in your case in court, it is the law anywhere in the world.
And these books are still books of authority after all this time.
Yes, they are. And that's the amazing thing. Blackstone's was the newest, right? They go back for 1,000 years. And these are the books of authority of the law. So I quit arguing with that and said, well, I'm going to go see what he said, because it looks like I can always say that, you know, it came out of a book of authority. Again, not knowing anything how to use it other than the idea, you know, and let's go see what the man had to say. And, you know, a year later, he had a lot to say, and it wasn't just reading him, but it would lead me to read other books on common law deeds, getting more into, I like Bouvier's dictionary, mainly because, now I don't know this for sure, but I heard it on Talk Show, that the Senate said that that's the law book of America, and it's the one that the Supreme Court uses. So if that's the definitions they're going to use, that's what I want.
They tend not to be that different from the definitions in Black's. Is that the case, or is there a lot of difference between the two?
You know, I wouldn't say that there is, but he can have definitions for, I'm going to call it legal, right? And I'm looking for the lawful definition. I want to know the one that's lawful, and there's a reason that Bouvier's is called a dictionary, a law dictionary, right? That's what it is. It's a dictionary on law terms. But, Nick, one of the things you find out real soon is that they never define the words ever, right? So, for instance, when they tell you, well, how are you going to pay for this? Well, define pay, right? If you go to the definition of pay, there may be 7, 8 different definitions. Which one are we using?
They don't tell you,
right?
Which one, yeah.
Yeah, all right. So, and we never make them define what the word is, or what the definition is of the word. Therefore, if they're not going to define it, we can define it ourselves. Right? And so these are the kind of ideas that I had in my head, not knowing anything about what I was doing other than to start reading these books. And it didn't take long. You get into the section where he's talking about feudal law. In the very last chapter, he talks about the corruption of feudal law. And in these feudal law chapters, he's talking about all these different conveyances of land, right? Where the king would give a inheritance to somebody, and it was theirs to use. They couldn't sell it. They couldn't give it away. You know, it was theirs to use and stayed in their family as long as they wanted it and did the will of the king. And as long as they did that, it was theirs, right? But if they ever decided to leave, well, then somebody else would get that position. Well, that was all based on the ground that we walk on. All they've done today is they have taken that same idea, and now your body is land. By definition, land is earth or soil in any form whatsoever. And if you look long enough, you'll see a definition of land where the word people is used. Right?
Yeah.
And so your body, your land, has been registered at birth. It's a voluntary registration of your land.
And that's because we're treated as sort of parts of the earth, because we're made up of the same stuff.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's your body, but that isn't you, Nick. It isn't Robert Allen. Robert Allen's an immortal living soul, created in the image of God. Here is one of his people, right? I was given the name Robert Allen by the Creator. He knew it before my parents did. So it's a gift from the Creator. That's who I am. I'm the spirit that lives within this earthen vessel that was created from the union of my sovereign biological father and my mother's estates. And, you know, they gave me a piece of land, right? We call it a birth, whatever you want to. When the baby comes out, it's just land coming out, and, you know, and the spirit is in there at that time.
And this union of estates is occurring irrespective of the contract that is marriage, isn't it?
Yes, yeah. And the man is always considered the sovereign of the union, right? It is a union of these two estates, and he's the sovereign over both unions. So, you know, it takes his blessing to give away this land. Well, there's a document created at the hospital that has your sovereign father's name at the top, and it has, you know, your information and your mom's information and so forth, and footprints on it, and you know. And it's rolled up as a closed court roll, and it's sitting on a shelf someplace. It's a land patent to your land, which should have been given to you, but you decided, or they decided for you, to register your land. And they put you into a contract as a grantor as an infant. Well, as it turns out, all infants' deeds are either void on their face or voidable, and you can avoid them at a later time.
So that's
and they just never tell us that. But yeah. It's written all over the place. It's not that it hasn't been said. They don't talk about it.
You can't make an infant a grantor.
That's correct. How can an infant be a grantor on a deed? You know, the grantor is the one giving something away, right?
Yeah.
So how can you do that as an infant? And the first things your feet touch are a piece of paper. You know, and they put them on there, and then I believe, you know, one of the things that happens when you're in the back room is they prick your heel, get a drop of blood, and they put it on another piece of paper, which creates the all capital letter name, which is the name of a landed estate. When you're born into a hospital and delivered to a doctor, again, I've been told, I haven't done the research myself, but hospital and doctor are both military terms, right? Mm-hmm. You were delivered into the care of the military. And they become your guardian ad litem. And so until you're the age of 20, they're your guardian. And then they get us to enter this other contract somehow, because the age of 21 is supposed to be the age of majority. That's why I say 20. And I've been told that the records leave the hospital after 20 years, and they go someplace else. So now you move from having a guardian to having a trustee because of some other piece of paper that we signed, probably signing up for Social Security or something. Again, I haven't done the research, but some trigger mechanism, right? But all this is based on an original deed that you were made a grantor of as an infant, and all infants' deeds can be avoided.
And do you get actual footprints on your birth certificates? Do you?
Yes. Yeah. Well, on a document somewhere.
Right.
Yes.
Which we don't.
I've not seen mine. Right.
Right. That's a new one on me, I must admit.
Right.
I had heard about it.
You have to understand. We say birth certificate, and there's many different forms that are involved, right? There's a certificate of live birth. There's a certified copy of record of birth. For you, there's the long form, there's the short form, and there's another form that they never talk about. So whether they did it that way for you or not, it doesn't matter, because this system has been ongoing for thousands of years, right? We're in the same system that was around when Jesus was here, right?
Herod.
Caesar wanted all the babies registered.
Yeah. And that's what they were running away from, wasn't it?
And what did they run away from? Right. Because Herod was coming to kill all the babies.
Because that's what they were going to do if you refused to register, presumably.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, register or die.
Well, no, when they register you is actually when they kill you, right? That's what the truth is. That's when you die.
Yeah, yeah.
And you're basically baptized into Jesus' death at that time, and you're waiting to be born again. And that's what we're trying to do now is, you know, we have people that are walking in offices, I'm back from the dead, right? So if any of this had any truth to it, right, was the first thing. This was my interpretation of what he was saying that they had done to us. And then he says how it was done in these different chapters. And everything is written as a riddle and a code, right? And you may be reading a sentence that has a semicolon in it, and you'll find out that the positions he was talking about of defendant and plaintiff above have changed below. Mm-hmm. So it's like two different actions depending on what side of the coin you're on, you know? But it looks like it's all reading as one thing, and if you just read right through it and blow through it, you may not get the witness that you're looking for that, oh, he just changed the position of who was who here. You know, that's why it reads this way. And until you read it, you know, it's kind of hard to understand, right? But
even as you read it, it's kind of hard, isn't it? Because you do have to go backwards and forwards a bit to find out. You sometimes don't understand it first time through or comprehend it. And then something you do comprehend first time through helps you understand on a second reading. It's not obvious by any means, this exercise, is it?
No. So what I did is I found a online version of Blackstone that I could cut and paste the pages out of and put it into a Word document. And then split it into paragraphs, because one thing about you, the old English writing, is they didn't like periods. They write a sentence that goes on for 7, 8, 9, 10 lines.
Right.
And no paragraph breaks. Well, for me, that's really hard to read, you know. So the first thing I do is start looking for periods and kind of break it up into ideas. And then within that section of paragraph, there's going to be a lot of words that I've decided I don't know the definition of anything. I'm going to go see what the law dictionary says. So I go look in Bouvier's. What's this? What's this? What's this? And, you know, write those down below that paragraph, and then there'll be Latin terms in there, and try to get those translated using Google Translator and write those in. And, you know, so all I've really done is produce my own study notes and then decided at some point some months ago to start sharing them with anybody else that had interest, hoping to get somebody else who had looked at this to say, yeah, I can see where that would be, or no, you're wrong here, or you know, whatever it is. And it's just been a journey ever since, Nick, you know.
Yeah. And, have you had any correspondence as a result of the stuff you're putting up on YouTube?
All the time, man.
Yeah.
All the time, you know. So along this line, then, understanding what common law deeds were, that everything in law, in first of all, common law, small c common law, defined by Blackstone's, who's an authoritative book on law used in court as the law, says that common law, small c common law, is nothing more than the unwritten law of reason. You know, what's reasonable between two peaceful men? Why are we going to argue about this, right? So then you have English common law, which is inferior to common law because it's been modified. Every time you add a word to a root word, you modify the word, you make it less powerful.
So by adding there the word English,
adding your surname to your name does the same thing. You were given the name, in my case, Robert Allen. That's the most powerful name there is. Anything added to it lessens its power. Right? Okay. So that's why I'm Robert Allen. I may say I'm of the family Rytluski, you know, a Polish name, but I don't have to, right? I was given the name Robert Allen, period. I demand that you address me as such. And so we've had people now get called by their first and middle name in court by a judge.
Okay,
you know, they didn't call her Mrs. This particular lady. You know, we call her Kitty Canary. You know, she didn't get called Ms. Canary in court. She got called Kitty. And she proceeded to watch the plaintiff's attorney take a little ass beating.
Mm-hmm.
And her case was dismissed. She was going in for an eviction hearing, right? And of course, I'm kind of jumping around here, right? But one of the things I noticed in doing this is that in a common law deed, the grantee, so the grantor writes this deed up, right? And he has to get three witnesses, or basically two witnesses to his deed. And when he does, he goes and records it. And once it's been recorded into the public record, you know, he can't change his mind. So now it's sitting there, and let's say it's a real estate, right? So the guy who sold it to you is the grantor. He has granted and conveyed this property to you, yada, yada, yada. Now it's been recorded. That's how they normally sit now. As the grantee, you're supposed to go and acknowledge that deed. Otherwise, the deed has not been lawfully executed.
Okay.
Right? Nobody's done that, right? That's why you get charged property tax, because the proper owner's not appeared and claimed the deed. So when they look and say, well, there's no owner for this property, the grantee has never stepped forward, that must be a tenant there. We have to collect rent for the owner in case when he does appear, right? That's their fiduciary duty to make sure that your estate is always making you money.
Okay, and that's because you haven't turned up and assured them that their fiduciary duty is actually to you.
That's correct.
Yeah.
That's correct, right? So, I came up with this thing. It's one of the videos I did, right? Which all these videos are at Rob Ryder on YouTube, but it's R-O-B-B-B, three Bs, Rob Ryder on YouTube. And so since you haven't done that, when you do and you take it back, that should get you off the tax rolls. You become the owner, right? The owner has appeared. Well, then we found out, well, they're still coming after people who have done this. You know, the banks are. And so then you start. So as people would go in and try to do this, they're going in, now they're walking into registered deeds offices and asking to have their, you know, to acknowledge their deed. And they get all sorts of strange looks. Some people have no problem. Other people that get out of here, we're going to send the sheriff after you, right? But but as we learn more and got more effective and said, look, just listen to what they're saying. They're not always, you know, trying to get rid of you. Sometimes they are acting as what I like to call a counter troll, you know. Their job is to get you out of there, right? Don't ask too many questions.
Yeah.
So you need to get past the counter troll, and really what you're looking for is the people who have taken an oath of office at the county level. Because the largest body politic is a county, and it's a kingdom of the kings that live in that county. And if you're a king in that county, then you're the king. Or you can be a subject. It just depends on if you're going to accept their oath and bind them to it and tell them they have a fiduciary duty to you, or you're going to bow your head and walk out the door. You know?
Yeah.
Are you just an uppity slave, or you know, are you the king? Who are you? So we started to do these deeds. Then we found out about that they would start telling us, well, a deed is a deed is a deed. Well, in a lot of cases, then there's this other thing in there called the one for the real estate, they call a warranty deed or a grant deed or something like that. The one for the mortgage is a deed of trust or a mortgage. And I was reading this section on land law about mortgages and advances. And it said, if the beneficiary of a mortgage has not acknowledged the deed, right, similar to what we hadn't done on the land, if they haven't gone in and signed this piece of paper, basically, for this deed of trust, then you, as the grantor, mortgage, or whatever the title is that for the piece of paper, you can revoke the trust. Doesn't say you have to ask anybody, just says that's what the law says, revoke the trust. So now we've been revoking these trusts. And the way we're doing this is as a public record, small p public, which is an attested witness. It's a witness of a witness of you.
So you're basically getting a document with your own signature and two others on it, making your trinity.
Close, right? But let's look at it this way. You're going to write your this is your living man, free will, act, and deed. You're going to put it on a piece of paper, whatever it is, right? I like to acknowledge the deed to the house I live in, you know, more words than that, but you get the idea.
Yeah.
And then you're just going to say that, you know, this is my free will, act, and deed as a sovereign man or whatever, and I have laid my hand and applied my seal. And so when you write your name, you just put in parentheses behind it, seal. Because in common law, everything must be sealed. Nothing needs to be signed. They got us thinking that our, you know, what we call our signature is a signature. Well, it can be, unless it has the word seal behind it, and then it's a seal, and now it's been done in common law.
And that's just by writing your name with the word seal after it.
That's correct. And if you were to look at somebody's, again, I don't know what they call them in your part of the world, but we call them a warranty deed is what the grantor gives to the grantee on a piece of property. And when you look at where the grantor has signed his name behind it, it's already on the form, parentheses seal.
Right.
Right? It's already on there. They're telling you that you didn't sign your name, you put down your seal. Well, so you write this up, And then you add to it what's called a certificate of acknowledgement. And so basically, all this is a few lines of text that in the United States, you can go to a public notary or notary public, as they call them here, and they're going to witness that really all you've done in this little thing you told her is, I've done this in my free will act and deed, right? You've come in and said, yes, I've done this in my free will act and deed. She's going to put her seal on it.
So it's just basically saying that an actual flesh and blood man is responsible for this.
Right, and this is my free will to do so. I'm not under any coercion, duress, or anything. I'm doing this in my free will. And you say these words to him. So a living man has come in and spoke, because in law, men speak in legal, dead right. They can't speak. That's why they write it.
Cool.
Okay?
Yeah.
So now you have this seal from her, and then because they're a notary, well, they have an oath someplace, and we need to get from there, whoever's holding their oath, and it's the Court of Faculties in the UK, you know, that's who handles the oaths for these notaries, you get a certificate of authority for them. And you'll find out it's coming for the Archbishop of wherever you're at. Could, you know, if you're in London, it's the Archbishop of Canterbury. If you're in Wales, you have an Archbishop of somebody in Wales, right?
And that's basically giving an additional authority to the person whose seal it is. Is that correct?
They're attesting that the person, that this notary that, you know, acknowledged your deed, has done so lawfully and has full faith and credit.
Right.
You know, that they were able to do it. They're not telling this notary what they can do. They're saying that this notary did it on this date, they were able to do it, period.
Okay.
Right? So that's all they're doing. They're not reading your paperwork. All you need to get is the certificate of authority for that notary. And then when you staple it to your document, you've just created what's called a public record, full faith and credit. It's considered full proof evidence used in any civil matter, is the highest form of evidence there is, and it's also a common law deed. It has three seals on it.
Right.
So these are the documents that we've been producing and putting into the court cases, and people getting called by their first name and, you know, and stopping foreclosures. And I talked to a guy last night. He stopped 30 foreclosures so far doing this, right?
Brilliant.
This is all he's doing, is going around helping his brothers and sisters stop their foreclosures.
Mm.
You know?
So this is a functional method. It's working for you over there.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And every time somebody now goes in and accepts somebody's oath, they're finding out a little more information. An oath is written as a common law deed. The grantor is the guy that took the oath, and he's given, the grantee is the public. But unless you acknowledge the deed, it doesn't have any effect between you and him. You have to acknowledge the deed. So I accept your oath, bind you to it, remind you of a fiduciary duty to me, and ask you not to be a concealer. Then where's the enforcement?
Should that work even, you know, with a police stop and things like that?
Well, you know, you would hope that it would, right?
Yeah.
But if the guys at the bottom knew what was going on, they wouldn't be doing that. You know, they wouldn't play the game. So
true.
At some level, and the only ones that really know a lot of it, I'm going to say, are the ones that were elected to the office, right? They're the keepers of the cipher. They're the king's privy council, and they're also part of the king's bench, which still exists. In Michigan, where I live in the United States, the king's bench is out of the probate court.
Okay.
And the way we found this out is one of the functions of the king's bench is to have a court of inquiry.
Which is a court of record, isn't it, the inquiry court?
Yeah. Right. It's the Inquisition, brother. That's what it is. It's the Inquisition.
Right. Still there.
Yeah. So if a lawful officer doesn't follow an order, you're supposed to file a complaint into the king's bench, into the court of inquiry, and they'll go investigate, find out what's going on, right? So the question was, well, you know, people say, well, the king's bench doesn't exist, where's common law? Well, sure it does. They just put it in probate. And we found this out by a guy emailing the probate court in Michigan and just saying, is the probate court the court of inquiry? And he got a one-word answer back, yes.
Excellent.
Let your yay be yay, let your nay be nay, you know. Yes, it is. Well, after we talked a little bit yesterday, about 10:30 last night, I got a call from a guy in Georgia. He had been down there yesterday. I can get some feedback here, brother. Can you hear me, Nick?
I can hear you. Yeah, you're clear here. I hear the sound is perfect going out there by the look
of
it.
Beautiful. Okay, it's good now. So he went in and asked, is this the court of inquiry? And the lady at the desk, well, I've never really heard it quite like that before. You know, said, just a second. She made a phone call. He said, hey, I have a customer at the desk. He's asking about a court of inquiry. And, you know, I have a customer. And he said he heard customer about a third time. He said, excuse me, I'm not a customer. I'm a sovereign man. I want to know if this is the court of inquiry.
Yeah.
About, you know, 10 more words, I said, boom, follow me, and took him in the back room.
So is identifying himself as a sovereign individual rather than a customer made a difference as well?
Yeah.
Isn't it important? These exact words we use.
Yeah. Either you're the king or you're not. If you're not a king, you're a subject. That's your only option, right?
He's basically letting them know that he knows their code. Is that right?
Yes, right. So he went into the back room and he was telling her, now what they had done is they had gone, his buddy has a court case on Friday, and they went, every court case has three cases going at once. There's one in common law, one in equity, and one in civil law.
They're all running concurrently, effectively.
They're all, right.
But we're given the impression.
The King's Bench and Exchequer, which is equity, have concurrent jurisdiction in all civil matters, period. All civil matters can be appealed to the King's Bench. Okay? It's been that way forever. Mm-hmm. So what they did is they had gone into what would be the Exchequer Court, and they got a copy of the True Bill, which is the, in my opinion, the bond they're trying to get you to sign by the end of the case, right? This has to do with the bonds. And they took it over to this, now they took that over to looking for the court of inquiry, saying, hey, you know, what's going on with this? And they said, well, this is, you know, we said, well, what do you mean exactly, right? Because they want to see what you know, right? So, yeah. You know, this shouldn't be happening, da-da-da-da-da. Said, well, do you have your other evidence? They said, no, I really didn't come prepared for that. He says, well, you go back and get it, and we'll stop this case immediately.
What were they looking for there?
I don't really remember exactly, right. Except more than just one piece of paper, I guess. You know, so now we need to talk about how these cases work, right? When you walk into a courtroom, you're walking into a court of common pleas. If it says it's a civil matter on your paperwork, you're walking into the court of common pleas, and the court of common pleas is not part of the King's Bench. It only has jurisdiction over civil matters. Now, besides Blackstone's, I've been reading a lot of Lord Coke also recently. And so between the two, where is this one? I thought I'd pull this out because I wanted to read it to you. But
they're never quite there when you want them, are they?
I know. What am I going to read to you? Right? I got so many things I wrote. What part is I want to read to you? But he says in his second book of the Institutus of Law, he's talking about the Magna Carta, Chapter 11, about the Court of Common Pleas, and that is not part of the King's Bench, and it only has jurisdiction over civil matters, and that the difference between, so before this statute, now he's talking about the Magna Carta, before this statute, Common Pleas might have been holden in the King's Bench, and all original writs returnable into the same bench. And because it was holden before the king and foul the king's court, it could be removed at his will. So what's heard at the king's bench are called pleas of the crown. And what's heard in the court of common pleas is called common pleas. You got pleas of the crown, you got common pleas. Well, a plea of the crown is anything that's criminal, and we can define what that is, or mortal. Well, mortal means man. So if you're a man, you don't go into a civil court. You go and do a plea of the crown.
Wow, criminal or mortal. Yeah.
Yes, right. Either or. And criminal is, you know, treason and murder and mayhem and, you know, a bunch of other things, right? Criminal fraud, all these things are.
Harm, damage, and loss is the way we define it amongst ourselves over here, that criminal is if you cause harm, damage, or loss or use mischief in your contracts.
Yes, exactly.
But mortal is a completely different thing to it. That's very surprised to me to find that there as well.
Right out of Lord Coke, brother. You know. So again, his book is a book of authority. Brought in the court is the law. I don't really care what the Magna Carta says as much as what he says it is, because I can say his book is a book of authority, right?
Yeah.
I'm not saying the Magna Carta isn't, but I can understand his interpretation of it, and that's good enough in court. And it says, pleas of the crown are for criminal or mortal. Well, if you're a man, you're mortal. So you wouldn't be taking your business into a civil law court. And he goes on to say there are no statutes written in civil law that give any remedy in equity. You know, you have to go to the other court of equity, which is under the Court of Exchequer, and it's under a guy called the Chancellor. Well, he just happens to be the same guy that's over civil law, but he's wearing two hats, right? Again, except his oath, he's over here as the Chancellor of equity, and over here he's the Chancellor over civil law.
And this is the concurrent courts running together with the same man basically in charge of the two, or three,
right.
In fact. Yeah.
Right.
And he's a religious character, is he? Is he part of the church, this guy?
Well, they're all priests, right? They wear a robe, they're a priest.
Right.
So I'm not saying that the archbishop himself touches any of this. It's just under his office, right? And he has people who have control. He has, what he has are called like masters of the role. So one of the courts that you have over there is called the Court of Faculties. And it's in Canterbury. I'm trying to think what you call it. Cathedral, right?
Okay.
So, that's where the court is, right?
Mm-hmm.
But it's a common law court, and in there are masters who are common law experts that run the Court of Faculties. The second highest guy in the Court of Chancery is a common law guy. It's called the Master of the Rolls.
Now, he may actually
be the general vicar. I keep talking about this guy called the vicar general, who's the archbishop's right-hand man. His job is to come out and correct the clergy whenever they make a mistake.
And we have several of those, do we, around the country, or do they have one that scuttles around doing the whole job?
No.
One for each county.
Well, not necessarily by county, by a group of counties. My particular one in my birth county, there's like 7 or 8 counties that fall under this diocese. Now, the Court of Chancery is where, if there's any civil action whatsoever, the complainant, the guy who's putting in the complaint, is supposed to go and sue out an original writ under the Great Seal that he gets from the Court of Chancery. Well, you know, so what is a Great Seal, right? What that's saying is if you walked into court and you're looking in your civil file for why you're there, you better see an original writ under the Great Seal of this Chancellor.
Okay.
Because if it isn't there, there's only one other option. There is one other option, and that's to admit that the case is worth less than 40 shillings. These are the words out of Blackstone. I don't know what a shilling is.
That's
right?
Very interesting. Did you use 12 old pennies? I think it's probably a couple of quid in new money.
Okay. Well, you don't get a jury, right?
Okay.
So now, in the American, in the U.S. Constitution, it says for any case, you know, less than $20, you don't get a jury. So if you walk into court and there's no jury, they're telling you the case is worth less than $20.
Brilliant.
They may be charging $500,000 for a mortgage, but they've already taken an oath or did an affidavit that says this case is worth less than 40 shillings.
Oh, that's a bit of a gamble, isn't it? They're playing a gamble.
It's just gambling, brother. Yes, it's a gamble. That's all it is. And so what Blackstone says is you walk up and give the judge the money.
Right. On the assumption right.
that
it's
I'm going to pay it. It says on the back it's worth 40 shillings. Here's 40 shillings. You know, here's next one. Go get a cup of coffee.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, nobody's used this yet as far as I know. I'm just telling you what the book says. Again, I just came across this stuff to this level of being able to tell you in my feeble attempts right now in the last couple weeks, you know, and that's why I would love other people to go look at it and see what it says to them. But
it's quite interesting that because I went on a seminar recently for a group we've got over here called the White Rabbit Group, and the man giving the seminar was talking about a seal from the Court of Chancery and from, I think it was from the Archbishop of Canterbury, and basically he'd done more or less what you described. He'd kind of, he'd got his own signature and a couple of witnesses, and then he'd been and got it notarized, and then he went and got this seal on it and took it into court, and apparently the judge just looked at the seal and called the man by his first name and said, "What do you want?" And the guy said, "I want the case, you know, discharged. And the judge
right,
said,
I think you said he said dismissed, yeah, right? Yeah, we should say what he said.
I probably got the word wrong, because right. Whatever happened, the case, the judge just said, yeah, okay, and that was that. And it seemed to be the seal that did it. So that may well be some kind of backup to your supposition there. I don't know. It might be unrelated, of course.
No, it's exactly what it is, right? He wrote his, whatever it is he wrote, right, is his free will act indeed. Basically, he wrote his own law. He's a sovereign of his own sovereign nation state. Law nations defines a sovereign nation state as any nation that's self-governing. And you look up the definition of nation, and it says to be born. So to be born self-governing makes you a sovereign nation state.
Right.
You know, so you're writing your own law for your sovereign nation state, and it says what it says, and you get the notary to do this acknowledgement, and you get the seal from the bishop, and they're saying that it meets due form of law. Don't argue with them.
Well, that seems right? to be the case.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
You know, I tell people, look, what you have in your hands, if they don't follow that, they're warring with the Constitution. That's treason. So you have all sorts of reasons. We didn't know where to take this, right? But came across this thing in the King's Bench in the Court of Inquiry and started making phone calls, and by gosh, they do exist. They just don't have it on the sign in the front of the building.
You've got to show that you understand their code to have it revealed to you.
Yeah. So that's what that book is that I sent to you, written in the 14th century by it's something about In Praise of the Laws of England when it's put into English, right? But it's a counsel, it's a chancellor, an old knight, talking to a young prince and why he needs to learn the laws and what laws he needs to learn. It's the laws of England. And the prince says, well, how long is this going to take me? You know, because he likes to ride horses and go play, you know, sword games and stuff, right? And he says, well, you know, basically a brain like yours, about a year.
Okay.
You know? So, what it has to do with understanding the idea of these, how everything is done with a conveyance of land of one kind or another. We gave them a lease on our body, and they owe us rent, and the rent is being held in reserve. And your all capital letter name is the name of a landed estate, right? And in that estate is where all your escrow is, all your from your ancestral line and your own production is in there. And when you go claim that and pull it out of escrow, all the fractionalization that has gone on against that is going to come out of the system because the reserve is no longer there for them to fractionalize. So they got to take it out of the system.
So that's not only all the stuff that's got in there nominally properly, but it's all the stuff they've falsely generated as a result of that.
Yes.
Well, it could be millions of dollars or pounds.
Millions,
for each
billions.
Person.
Who knows what the number is? Because you're going to clear this up not just for you, your whole ancestral line, and that's why, you know, in my opinion, we're supposed to go to the right person. They have the cipher. They're going to figure it out, right? You can't figure this out. You don't have the knowledge to know what the ancestral line is. But they're going to go, as long as they've been registered, they know who's who, right? What your ancestral line is. And they're going to release them of their sin.
So they've literally
their debt.
Been basically building, oh, sin and debt. And they've been building this across for across all of our ancestors, so it's not just us, it's stretching right back to when it was set up.
Yeah. So, you know, so having started to get these ideas, and then, you know, I've never been a big Bible reader, right? But I was brought up Catholic, and I watched all the Bible movies that were ever on, right? So you get some idea what's going on, right? And so the imagery is always so fascinating. So Moses, right, when he set his people free, he had to split the waters of the sea so they could walk across the land to the other side. When that group of people left, they took the lawyers and the scribes and the bankers with them, and they took all the gold, not just theirs, they took everybody's. And they went across, they went to the desert, they started to argue, false idols, the whole thing. One man had to go up to the mountain, talk to God, come down with 10 easy rules, but you got one man talking to God for you again, and these are written rules with numbers in front of them, and it's the first 10, only the only 10 from God, and everything else is a law written by a man for a man. Well, if you believe all those other laws apply to you, you gave up your sovereignty. You were only given 10 to follow. Why are you following all these?
Yeah.
Right? And that's the system of what our courts run on. Compared to Jesus, who walked on top of the water, he walked on top of Amity. He took 12 men and made them fishers of men. Well, what do you do with a fisher of men? You fish men out of the Holy Sea and take them back to dry land.
All right. Right. So right. It's got a whole different allegory behind it that we might right. not suspect is there.
Yeah, and Jesus dying on the cross is just him having a civil death, setting off his debt. He goes away for 3 days while the contract cures. He comes back. He's still walking down the same roads that he was there. I mean, he didn't get on an airplane and go someplace else. He was right where he left, right? They didn't bother him anymore. And then 40 days later, he ascended. And then you find out that there's this 40-day wait period for bankruptcy hearings, landlord-tenant relationships, and these special bank accounts that last for 40 days, revolving accounts, right?
Right.
So all these things tie together with what's happened to us. And then later on, you see a whole bunch of other Christians who are hanging on crosses. They just followed Jesus' path and got out of the system, too. He just left their system. You're looking at it from their eyes, right? Oh, my God, one got away. You know, what are we going to do with the sheeple now? They're going to follow him. We got to get them out of here.
Yeah. Yeah. I have read the Bible quite a few times, and I hadn't actually spotted this. I hadn't made that connection myself, because mm-hmm. there are connections with the 3 days as well, aren't there, in your research into Blackstone?
3, 7, 4, you know, 40 days, 40 years, yeah.
Mm.
You know, at the end of a 40, always something good happens, right? Jesus went into the desert for 40 days. He came back, and everything was good, but the 40 days in there was pretty bad, you know, but... So anyways, he ascends. Now you can go into the Hague Treaty and read it, and it talks about the ascension of these micronation sovereign states into the, you know, family of nations. Well, what the heck's a micro sovereign nation state? You know, that sounds to me like they're talking about the sovereign nation state and the law of nations, which is you.
Yeah.
And you ascending into this with a peace treaty, or, you know, you agree to the peace treaties. And So, Nick, at the end of the day, you know, people say, well, when you do this, well, you know, how do you live, right? Well, man gets everything he asks for, right? A man, compared to a person, is God. And, that people have a hard time saying, well, I'm God. Well, I don't, right? Not at all, because you're filled with the Holy Spirit. You were born a child of God. You must be God.
Yeah.
Right? You did not become God. If you're born a child of God, you still must be one. Now I'm a man of God. And Jesus, in the King James, I like to use the King James because in America, that's the one you swear on. They say that's what the law comes out of. So, well, in there, it says that Jesus is known as the One. And he calls himself the Son of Man. Well, Son of Man is like a fraction of two of three, so Son over Man. So if Son over Man equals One, then Son must equal One and Man must equal One. Others call him the Son of God. So... Son is One, God must be One. So everything equals a One, if you get my drift, right? One is One.
Yeah.
If you did the algebra, you would see that man equals God.
One above and none below.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I liked your phrase as well, that we're all kings and queens of the King of Kings.
Right, right. You were sent here to be a king of the King of Kings. Right? If not, because man has free will... There has to be a place for those to go that don't want to be that. Well, that's called civil law. You know, your free will first is you're going to go to war, go to peace. You're not going to go to peace. We're going to put you in this. We got people take care of people like you. Right? And that's the civil law society, where you can't handle your own affairs, so somebody else has to do it, and you give up full liability for, you know, partial liability, whatever that means. It didn't seem to make any difference to anybody I know. Their life has only gotten worse, even though they only have limited liability.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's kind of the gist of it. It comes down to everything that was done to you first as an infant was done in common law, and for you to get out, you have to go out the same door you came in. You have to go out through common law. Now, one of the things I've been reading here, in fact, a number of people here in the States, we've been sending paperwork or going to talk to people, and we're doing it as a public record because in America, the second seal that you get after the notary does it, at least in Michigan, when you get their seal that they could do this, it's under the seal of a court of record. And no order from a court of record can be overturned by any other court. And this is coming from the county, so think about that. The Supreme Court has said they can't overturn a ruling made by a court of record. Well, if that's the case, I guess they're not so supreme after all, which was actually the Superior Court. The United States Supreme Court, or that little court in the county that put that seal on it and said it was under the court of record.
That's interesting, isn't it? As usual, calling something supreme when it isn't is just about what we'd expect from this mirror world.
It's just all mirror, yeah. And sorry, I turned that heater off. Yeah. So another good book to read besides Blackstone's to really get a taste of what this is to look at Lord Coke's book 4 of his Institutus of Law, and it's about all the courts of England. And you soon find out that everything's a court. That's what they called them back in the day. Everything was a court. The sheriff's got two courts. There's a guy within the Exchequer who has a court called the Court of the Pipe. In Michigan, he's the drain commissioner.
He's the
whoever your sewer commissioner is that guy.
Right.
They have all these courts, and when they collect tax, a tax is nothing more than a rent to the king, and they're putting all this in escrow, waiting for the king to appear because of the Sestakeby Act of 1666 or whatever other act, wherever you are, they're using. Because I'm not saying it's the same all over; it has the same result, right? They've split your trinity one way or the other.
Yeah.
Right? And they're saying that you're walking around as a cattle, right, without the Holy Spirit.
Yeah.
Well, the Holy Spirit's still sitting on a shelf on a piece of paper. Right? You gave them legal title over to something. Who knows what the exact terminology is, but you gave them legal title because you registered your land, and as long as it's registered, there's an agreement that runs with the land. But all registration is voluntary, and you can volunteer to unregister your land.
So this is the business of delivering stuff to a third party to be held, for a given amount of time or until some condition is satisfied, yes?
That's right. Yeah, there's a covenant that runs with the land. Exactly.
Cool. Yeah.
And we've never avoided that. And when we do, right, then that takes everything back to the original document, which has the date of your birth on it. And there's nothing, there's no bond or anything else attached to that. And, first in line, first in time. So that will break the agreement you have with them. However, you still have this landed estate that was set up that they have control over, that you're going to get control over. And inside that estate, your all capital letter name is where all your escrow is located. They never charge you, the living man. They're always charging your escrow account, right? The all capital letter name.
Right. And that's called escrow. That's E-S-C-R-O-W, is it?
E-S-C-R-O-W. Yeah, the escrow.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And, it's in your escrow account. All we've been trying to do is figure out how you access that.
Right, an account held
but,
in
but
trust.
But going in the wrong court to do it, we keep going into a civil court which has no jurisdiction.
Because that's where they want to put us. But those other courts are running at the same time.
Yes.
You want to get into the court of equity.
Yeah. So, right now we're trying to figure out how we access those courts. And people are going, like the guy I was talking about last night, he's going back today to ask some more questions, and we'll see what he comes back with.
So a lot of this progress is being made by visiting the people or the offices that you've identified and simply asking them questions. You're not necessarily having to get yourself into any trouble to try it out live.
No, that's a great thing. Everything you're doing is absolutely lawful. if you produce a public record and they put their seal on it and say it's in due form of law and it isn't, well, who made the mistake? You or them. They're the ones who said it was. You took it to the expert, right?
Yeah.
So for instance, if I can reach this, I'll give you an idea of what, you know, one of mine sounded like. That, in fact, when we get done today, I'm going to make a phone call to a probate clerk who sent this back. This is something that I sent to them. And I called it my will, right? My will is landlord in the manner of my all capital letter name, Robert Allen Ritluski. So I'm the landlord of this landed estate is what I'm trying to tell them, you know. Be it known to all men and their persons, given the name Robert Allen as a fee simple absolute estate of inheritance from the father and the registered owner with an indefeasible title to my land, lawful owner of the real property and interest known as Robert Allen Ritluski. I'm telling them who I am. I'm not waiting for them to ask me, are you Mr. Ritluski? No, I'm going to tell them who I am. I'm Robert Allen, right? I'm an immortal living soul created in the image of the Father. Here is one of his people, conscious of my Trinity, a heart, mind, soul, born a child of God, now living as a man of peace, tribunal to court a record of my sovereign nation state with final jurisdiction in all matters to do with myself and my property. And it goes on from there, right? But the interesting thing is, when you get all done with this and you get these seals on it, their court of record is saying that it meets due form of law and therefore has full faith and credit by the Constitution. So to not follow it would be treason.
Great. Yeah. Great.
But so that's but what we didn't know is where to take them. Now we know this court of there is a court of inquiry, and it's right across the street. It's in the probate court.
And you've had them identify that, so that's your next move, is it, to see what happens when you put this in their hands?
Yeah, and that the brother in Georgia is going to be there today with, because you know his friend's case is tomorrow. You know, there's nothing like having to do it to make you go do it. I'm telling you, you know, the first people to go to try to save their houses were people that were losing their houses. They had nothing else to lose. It's just a piece of paper, right? You've submitted these pounds and pounds and pounds of paper. Can you submit, you know, one or two more and just have these seals on it and see what they do with it? And that's, you know, it started with one or two people and then five more, and then somebody would take three or four buddies in and do it. And, you know, so now we're getting to the point of, okay, we also need to include the land patent as part of this. And so nothing has been completed yet, right? This is all one step at a time. It's just all baby steps.
And you try, presumably, to make your stuff as simple and stripped down as you can, or do you get a bit of feedback and then find that you get a chance to kind of modify it and put it back, see what happens next time?
Yeah, I sit in the perfect position, right? Because I'm the one who gets all these phone calls. Either somebody needing help with their paperwork, you know, they don't understand something, or somebody telling me what happened when they went someplace, you know, and so I get to add all that to what I'm reading and say, oh, that would apply into here or you know, whatever it is. But what I'm finding is if you go to the lawful officers and accept their oath, I accept your oath, I bind you to it, you have a fiduciary duty to me. Do not be a concealer. Right? I have a question for you. But you have to ask questions that they can answer. They don't know everything either. Everything's compartmentalized. Right? It has to be within their jurisdiction.
Do you find ever that the claims that you're putting down in this paperwork gets a difficult response, or one that gets you a little bit deeper in than you were before?
I've heard people be threatened by lawyers because of what they put in, although nothing happened, right? One of the things that we were writing are these things called, you know, writs of mandamus, which is a prerogative writ that only the king can do. Now, I understand now that we're really not supposed to be writing these. I didn't understand it at the time. That's why you have a king's bench. The king never hands down the justice. That's what the judges do. But to you as a king, they're not your judge. They're your privy council. They're just carrying out your orders. So you need to give them an order for you, and that's the one they'll carry out. Otherwise, to all the subjects, they are the judge.
Yep, to citizens.
Right. You're either the king or you're a citizen. That's your choices. You know, you can be the executor, you're still a citizen. You can be a secured party creditor, you're still a citizen. If you're a person, you're a citizen. Go to the King James Version of the Bible, searchable version, put in the word person, and you'll soon find out that God has no respect of person. Right?
Very interesting, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, my thing has always been, do everything as the living man, right? And tell them that, you know, what that means, that you are an immortal living soul, created in the image of God. You're one of his children. You're just inhabiting an earthen vessel that was given to you by two other immortal living souls from their land, right? But all land belongs to the Creator. When you're done with it, it's going back to the ground. Earth, ashes to ashes, dust to dust. And then everything on the earth, you can't buy and sell it anyways. You can't buy and sell the Creator's property. Who are you to do that? Right? So a system was made up that you could go claim a piece so that, you know, there wouldn't be, we could at least stop the early arguments. Look, I've already claimed this. I have it on file, right? And so then they would come and protect you because, yeah, you have it on file that you claim the use of this. But you don't buy it. You just claim it. Yeah. And your family can stay there as long as they want to, or they can assign it to somebody else. But at the end of the day, if you guys leave and leave it vacant, in 6 months, if it's still empty, somebody else can come claim it. Next man walking down the road can claim it.
Yeah, and all the complexity that's put on top of the obtaining of land or the obtaining of beneficial use of it is effectively a fraud that's stuck on after the event.
That's all under trust law. You know, the other side of the Bible. Bible shows two paths. You can go down the path of their law. That's all trust law. You can go under the path of man's law, which was real simple. Honor the father, heart, mind, and soul. Treat your brother like you treat yourself. Man's given everything he asked for. Gets to live in paradise. Paradise on earth. And another great book that I never really got a chance to finish, but it just fascinating the way it's written, is The Cloud of Unknowing, written by Anonymous back in the 14th century.
Of Unknowing. What a great name.
Yeah, it is. And he's talking about this particular journey that people are on, that first, you're in the stages of the active mode of living, where you're involved with what's going on, laughing and joking, and everything's good. But, you know, you eventually you start to see that things are maybe not the way they are, and you go into this private mode, which is really what I'm in now, right, where you close yourself in, and this is all you really do, right? You contemplate what the answer is, and everybody is at that level at some point. You go through a transition of one to the other, and at some point you're doing both, and then you finally move into this one where this is really all you're doing. But when you figure it out, you get to go to the next step, which is your perfection. Right? This is the four stages of man. It's a fascinating book.
And I mean, that's I've heard other sort of developments like that. It's the way some of our more ancient and shamanic tribes see us as developing through these four stages. But in effect, as we started off saying, what we find out is as we move from baby through child to sort of grown-up man or woman, we actually find ourselves more and more under the hammer rather than more and more in our own ability to do whatever it is we're here to do. And all of us are experiencing that now. It seems to be getting much stronger.
We're all working for food, man. You know, we're just working for food. We're you know, the only true currency there is the willingness of a man to get off his ass and go make something.
Yeah.
Right? That pile of gold doesn't do anything just sitting there, right?
Yeah.
That wood, nothing, unless a man is going to go create, just like his father was a creator. He's going to go create with his hands. If you got those opposing thumbs for, you're going to take the energy he's given you, your divine energy, and turn it into something. But you don't sell it to your brother. You give it away as a gift.
Yeah. Yeah, it seems that money actually, well, these means of exchange and all of the debt that we've got are actually actually removing our ability to work for ourselves and turn out things that are just beautiful that we might want to give away.
Right, right.
Because we have to go and earn the money, otherwise somebody's going to come and take our stuff off us.
Whatever your God-given talent is what you were sent here to perfect, right? You may be I got a son who's a fantastic guitar player, right? He'll never get a chance to probably play in a band, and I wouldn't want him being in that life, right? But there's no reason that isn't what he should do, because it brings him pleasure and those that listen to it, you know. What's wrong with that? Isn't that enough? You know, And then, you know, because of the alternative energy stuff, I mean, they've ruined the food, they've ruined the atmosphere, they've ruined everything to reduce the energy levels that get to the man's body to make us more compliant. You know, so I eat a lot of rock. I put it in water, right? I drink a lot of salt water, you know. Now, when I say salt water, I mean, this is Himalayan. Yeah. Salt. I just like the color, right? But yeah. It has all the salts your body needs, not just sodium. It has them all. You know, you're supposed to be like the ocean. And, you know, that changes your electrolytic levels, and it changes your pH, and it kills all the bugs in your body, because now the charge of your body is different than the animals that are living in your body, and it kills them all.
Yeah.
You know, and it makes your brain work better, in my opinion. At least I believe it has mine, you know. I mean, so all they're doing is trying to reduce our energy levels to make us compliant. And you know, that's what the chemtrails are for, either to make you sick or to keep these certain frequencies of energy from hitting the ground and, you know, whatever else they can do to us, right?
Yeah, but and the
at the end of the day, we're harder to kill than cockroaches. That's why we're still here.
It's quite amazing, isn't it, how despite all the fact that's being thrown at us, many, many of us mm-hmm. are managing still to kind of move on without intervention, shall we say.
Yeah. Yeah. So I don't blame other people for the way they are, because I don't know what they've been through. Who knows how many shots of crap they've had put in them, you know, or, you know, had their mind messed with or something, you know.
Well, it's, so
it's not that people are bad. They live in a bad, they're living on the wrong side of the tracks is all.
It's difficult, isn't it? Because, I mean, you know, you look at other people's parents and their educators and the training they've had and the experiences and stuff, and we can't possibly come to any conclusion about what we'd do in that circumstance, quite right. Apart from the fact that the entire legislative system, such as it is designed to rob us of anything, all of our comforts, anything that we have a kind of right to expect.
Right.
So
and so really what I found is all you can really do is whatever feels right in your heart, right? I know a lot of people who've gotten themselves in trouble in court who really took somebody else's advice without really believing what they were doing, you know, but the guy was selling it for $500, sounded like it was a thing to do. Well, it didn't work out, you know? So for me, it's never been anything to do with the money. It's just trying to find the way to the door and hold it open for the next guy. But I'm not going to stand there very long. I'm going to walk through the door and go to paradise, because I truly believe it exists and it's for man. And all we need to do is get rid of this frickin' agreement that runs with the land. So when I call this clerk of the probate today, I'm going to bring up to her this. There's a thing called an inquest of office, right? Common law, ancient. Inquests of office were devised by law as an authentic means to give the king his right by solemn matter or record. The king may not enter upon or seize any man's possessions upon bare summaries without the intervention of a jury. So the Court of Inquisition is the jury, right? And it's going to be based on the record. Well, somewhere in the files, you have something similar to what I have. I have a certified copy of a record of birth, right? A certified copy of a record is full proof evidence that the record exists. It may not be the record, but it's the record that exists. And on mine, it says the record remains in the office of the clerk of the county where I was born.
Right.
So that's where the record is, right? So I'm saying that that's my property, and I want them to have an inquisition to tell me if it is or not. If it is, then I'm the king, right? Mm-hmm. And if I'm the king, then I wish to have my privy counselor, expert in real estate law, give me a call.
And you've been identifying these privy counselors, haven't you, trying to find out who they are?
Yeah. Listen, I was talking to a buddy in Cleveland yesterday, Cleveland, Ohio, which is a state, you know, real. Michigan is one that looks like a mitten, for those of you who don't know, and then Ohio's right below it. He went into the history of his county. He says, it's right here, Bob, within the first freaking, you know, two paragraphs of the history, it's telling that these guys are members of a privy council at the county level. You know, all the elected commissioners, I don't know what they call them in the township level. You have a county, and then they break a county into districts, and each of those districts may have somebody, and, you know, and the people in the court that anybody who is elected is part of this council.
Really?
Yeah.
So there's loads
so
of them there.
They've all taken an oath, right? You accept their oath. Now they work for you.
So that works.
Go ask them a question.
From the county down to the town, down as far as the level. I mean, we've got parishes over here. Do you have them? That are kind
well,
of,
I've heard of parishes, yes. They don't call them that here, but yes, I know places they do call them parishes.
So
sure.
Some of the parish council, I believe, are elected here.
Yes.
So presumably that makes them lower order members of this same system.
Right. So I would call that a township here, what you just called. And we have township people that are elected also, right? So they all make up this larger, you know, council of the county. But they all work for the kings. If you're the king, they work for you. So the attorney general of the king is the county prosecutor, the guy who was elected to office. He's the guy you should be taking your complaints to and saying, I want to do a plea of the crown to the king's bench.
And, again,
and if he acts stupid, say, well, I'm going to take your ass to the court of inquiry, brother. That's my next stop. If it isn't you, I'm going there next.
Yeah. Yeah, and you presumably you accept his oath as well and remind him of his fiduciary
everybody.
Duty. Yeah.
Yeah, right. So when I write a public record, I just say on there I accept the oaths of all public officers. You know, I'm not going to say just one. I accept them all. Now, I think you could look at you can do this same thing without getting these seals from a notary and the one from the archbishop. I believe if you did it this way. If you got three witnesses, right, who aren't, again, they're not witnessing you signing this document. They're just witnessing that you said you've done it of your free will, act, and deed. So you'd write a little witness statement that says that's what they're doing.
Okay, so they're making
and then
sure
behind their name, put seal.
They're making sure you're not doing it under duress, effectively.
Correct. Yeah, that there's no duress involved. Right, right. The other thing everybody needs to understand is every civil case that's ever been done has a flaw in it. Okay. Anybody who's in jail could be gotten out tomorrow. Anything that's happened in the past can be undone. You just need to appeal it to the king's bench. Now, we should know what the flaw is, and if you read these chapters of Blackstone, book 3 from like chapter 17 to 25 or 26, wherever it ends, and really, really, really study it and pay attention to every word that's being used, looking for semicolons where he may be flipping the positions around and so forth. If you were to, in fact, this is what I'm probably going to do, Nick. I'm going to actually print these out because I know there's three courts going and get three highlighters and start highlighting lines that go with each court. And then just look at the yellow highlighted and say, okay, write that down on a spreadsheet of this is this court, this is this court, this is this court. And it tells you at every step along the 9-step process of a court case what the remedy is.
Right the way
but the easiest
point.
Remedy was right at the top where it says the king is never legally liable, and if something's happened, it's one of his ministers' faults. So get the title of king.
Yeah.
You know? Because a king is nothing more than the chief magistrate. So he's the chief magistrate, then he has a judicial chief magistrate and an executive chief magistrate and a legislative chief. But again, a word's been added, it's lower than chief magistrate.
So if you get yourself, if you get them to recognize that you're sovereign and that you've read the code, you're in that position, yes?
That's my opinion. Hmm. I'm in that position. I'll be given the status of royalty. I don't know if that means you get somehow you're going to get some kind of identification, right? I think it'll have a picture and a thumbprint on it. And a bar card that says, do not harass, do not detain, offer all assistance. Right?
Which is pretty much a passport, isn't it?
Yeah, right. Because man can go any place on the earth that he desires. You can go look at anything in the Vatican you want. You can go look at anything in a pyramid you want. You can have any technology given to you, and you can go ahead and make it. You just can't sell it to your brother. You got to give it away for free.
Of course, there's several of us that are starting to do that now, aren't there? There's quite a lot of things that are now being done under what's called general public license.
Yeah.
That your work doesn't have to be sold. You can move it on the condition that whoever works on it next also moves it on for no charge.
Mm-hmm.
So we seem to be making a move towards what you've just described in the general world without necessarily reference to the law, which is great, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. Everything is connected, you know, and we all know that 2012 is supposed to be a year of, you know, something happening, right? Look at, to me, Revelations in the Bible is written for them. It isn't written for me. I'm having a picnic. All I'm seeing of the horses is their ass and tail chasing them bastards over a hill.
Yeah.
You know, I'm going to go back to my party. It has nothing to do with me.
No, no.
And if you think that statutes and laws apply to you, then you know you need to consider this. At least in America, all these people writing these laws go every August out to a place called Bohemian Grove in California, where they worship a 40-foot-tall owl. And they put their hoods on, they wore in college, and they float a cadaver across the water, and they burn it at a frickin' altar. This is the senators, the congressmen, the president. All of them are out there. It's called Bohemian Grove. You know, I'm not a big fan. I'm not going to say I don't like Alex Jones. I don't know if you ever heard of Alex Jones.
Yeah,
you know, he's kind of the...
Yeah, we hear him.
Yeah, right. I mean, he's the extremist, right? His information is probably 100% correct. He's just giving you their interpretation of what you should think it means, in my opinion. But it's not that the... Look, they go out there, man, and they pray to this owl. And it's so if you are going to say that the laws passed by man are praised and all has anything to do with you, that's up to you. I refuse to be part of it.
Yeah,
I got my two, honor the Father, heart, mind, and soul, treat my brother like I treat myself. And for you to judge me is criminal in the eyes of God. Right? You can judge my deeds, you can't judge the man.
No, judge not that ye be not judged.
So,
these sort of 12 stages, you reckon that even after the execution of whatever judgment has been taken, you can still turn it around? There's still some remedy available, at least according to the old books, and that remedy is still available because nobody will have removed it?
That's correct. Yeah, there is no statute of limitation when it comes to the king and his property,
because there's no liability.
Right. And so when your office is found, what they call patents or grants that you have done to that point are all void. This is, you know, these are the things that are covered in those first few videos I did that I called the Achilles heel of civil law, right?
Yeah.
There's a lot of other ones on there about things that as I came through this journey that, you know, have led me to this, but now all I'm doing is I'm taking these particular chapters of Blackstones and throwing them into a Word document, highlighting the parts that mean something to me, making sure I understand what they mean as best I can, and then sharing it on a video. I'm just talking about it with the damn form on the screen. You know, that's all I'm doing. So don't say that, you know, you may say my interpretation is incorrect, but all I'm doing is trying to read another man's words. That's an authoritative book on law. We really should see what he had to say.
Yes, yeah, especially being as the people that we've got telling us nowadays are quite clearly not telling us what we need to know.
Right. And I don't think that they can, right? Because when they take these oaths, if you take an oath to a piece of paper written by a man for a man, right, you've given up your sovereignty. It's really, you just became a citizen of whatever that you've agreed to these rules written by a man for a man. Nobody said you had to. You did it of your own free will.
That kind of brings us to, we've had a question in the chat box asking whether you have any knowledge of or opinions on the matter, on the subject of subject matter jurisdiction. You know, the business of actually handing over jurisdiction simply by agreeing on subject matter. Have you had any study in that? Has that come into your research?
Well, yeah. If you walk into the civil court, you gave them jurisdiction.
Just by walking in?
Yeah. Right? Where what you should have done was walked in the next door over, which may have been the Exchequer Court or the Court of Record, and handled it there as a man. I can't tell you exactly what that is just talking. I would, you know, a lot of this stuff myself, Nick, I have to actually be looking at what I did before so that I remember what it is that it says, right? I mean, that's how fresh it is to me. In a month, I'll have it down pretty pat, right? But I'm in the learning process myself. But we can go to these sections and quite clearly say what Blackstone says the remedy is.
So he's quite specific. He's going through it in some detail, it seems. It certainly
looks... He's telling you when they skip the step to get to where they are, and when they skip that step is where your remedy is, right? Because they didn't do what they were supposed to do.
And that's when you're looking at your semicolons and things, that when they are...
Well, again, for instance, let's just take the very simple one. You're going to go into a civil court. No matter what the door says, it's the court of common pleas. To have a case in there, the plaintiff had to go get an original writ under the Great Seal from the Chancellor. If that isn't in there, then he's doing an affidavit that says the case is worth no more than 40 shillings. Yet they're in there telling you that you owe $350,000 or something for a house or, you know, whatever it is, right?
You must be quite excited about the day you get to test this one.
Oh, God, yeah, man. Yeah. So... See, I think that you don't need to go in their court to do that. You go point that out to them in the private. Say, what is this, man? Okay, it says it's worth 40 shillings. I'll just pay it right now.
Yeah.
You know, I don't need to wait and do it in the courtroom. But at the same time, they've also filled out a writ in common law that is charging you with trespass. General trespass. It has nothing specific. And the idea is when they do this, and then they have you in custody, if there's something else they can charge you with, they can bring it forward at the same time. But they don't actually have to have you in custody for you to be in custody. I mean, you know, and if or, you know, it's just crazy how they work the system, right? You know, if we change this to say this, we can do this, is what they were doing.
Yeah.
So that's the common law thing they have. And so when you're in the courtroom, you know, they ask you questions. Do you understand the charges, right? Most people just say yes, although they don't really. If you don't have them read into the record and it wasn't defined, then who knows what charge means?
Yeah, indeed. And who can understand who would want to stand under right. What these people are saying anyway? But also, almost inevitably, when you enter one of these places, they are deliberately trying to confuse you. So even if you think you understand, you probably don't.
Right. So if you just say that, look, you think you're being charged for some statutes, right? That's what's written on the piece of paper, you know, broke this statute, whatever it is, you know. They don't tell you that there's also statutes that are securities. They're known as a statute staple and a statute merchant. And it's a bond that's been acknowledged by the defendant. That was this true bill, in my opinion, that the guy I was talking about earlier got before anybody had signed it, right? The game is to get you to acknowledge that by confessing in this other court without you knowing it. And then the guy is going to take a recess and take your file back to the back because he has to hand deliver it to the court of record. And they do a mock jury, find you guilty. You know, now they have what they needed from the common law side to continue with the case.
But if you've approached it by not going in there and by dealing with it administratively with the other court, they can't do that.
Right, but part of it is, when they ask you if you're guilty or not guilty, they're talking about are you guilty or not guilty to trespass. Right?
Yeah.
Not what was written on the paper. You know, the charge was trespass. Are you guilty or not guilty? Well, I guess I'm, you know, whatever you say, well... Then once you put in a plea, it descends to issue, they say. And then the issue is whatever the record is, and that's whatever somebody has written. And you haven't written anything, and this guy has a record.
This is your issues of demur, is it?
Mm-hmm.
That's what I haven't looked up. What does demur mean? Do you know, or is that one that you've still got to...
I'd have to go look at it, bro. Yeah. You know, in fact, I got a Bouvier's open up there.
Well, it's just
I can be there in just a minute as we're talking. So, but what I noticed, Nick, is as I've been reading these myself and doing these videos on them, you know, I can see that where every step we go further into it, it becomes a little more complicated, more steps, right? Which means the easiest answer is the very first one. And the very first answer is the king is never legally liable. If something is going wrong, it's his minister's fault.
And the minister.
Right. So again, get the status of king.
Yeah, yeah, get the status of king, and that way all these people are your ministers, which is right. The point of binding.
So you do a writ of right, or that's one way you can do it, is demand a writ of right, you know, that you claim by right that this is yours. And unless somebody steps forward with a superior claim, then you're claiming it. Or like I'm doing, I'm going to ask for an inquest of office. I believe I'm the king. I have the superior record. You know, I demand a coroner's inquest. Because the coroners we're talking about are the common law coroners of the 12th century who were the king's right-hand men. They were the keeper of the king's pleas, the keeper of his orders, protector of his property.
The coroners?
Yes, the coroner.
Wicked.
Yeah. You know, this is funny. Only a common law coroner has the authority to recover a drowned body. Right? So if you want to know who the coroner is, look to see who recovers drowned bodies. Now, in Michigan, it says it's the sheriff's department. And you go to the sheriff's department, and you read their site. It has parts of the Magna Carta, you know, in their description, which is so odd. You're reading all this statute stuff, and all of a sudden, here's parts of the Magna Carta in here talking about drowned bodies. You know, what the hell is this all about?
That's odd, isn't it?
Yeah.
So you said the Magna Carta the Magna Carta is still current, at least in you know, and still acknowledged as current in some of your...
Yes, it's right there. I pointed this out this summer, and so what happens, Nick, is every once in a while somebody gets a wild hair. They get inspired, they get a little shot of God energy, whatever it is, and they go ask a question, you know. And so he went to the sheriff's office, he was looking for the common law coroner. Which, you know, when you walk in a sheriff's office, I'm here looking for the common law coroner, that's going to make their eyes bug out, and they're going to start shaking. You know, I mean, people don't normally talk like that. What are you talking about? I'm looking for the guy who, by law, is able to recover drowned bodies, the common law coroner. Says it's the sheriff's department. I'd like to talk to him. Well, this went on for 5 minutes. They finally said, well, look, we really just help assist, right? He said, well, that's fine. Well, who's the common law coroner? And they gave him a magistrate's business card. And so he went and found this guy. And he walked up to him and said, excuse me, you know, Mr. whatever, are you the common law coroner? And the guy looked at him and said, well, that's not my title. And the man said, well, I didn't ask you what your title was. I asked you if that's the office you hold. But because if it is, I would like to set a meeting up to come and talk to you. And the guy reached in his pocket and gave him a business card. He said, well, here, you're going to have to call this number and make an appointment. And the brother said, well, I already have your phone number and business card. They gave it to me to get here. And the magistrate said, this number's unlisted. However, the guy lost his mojo and all these months later has never called that phone number.
Really?
Yes. I don't know what it is, brother. You know, happens every time. And I'm not blaming anybody because it's happened to me, right? You get inspired, you go so far, and you're basically fighting the devil, man. It's going to take all your strength out of you, you know? So you may not do the next step right away. Don't feel bad about it. Just say, you know, okay, I did something, right? You know, I'll ask tonight for a little more guidance, you know, a little more whatever, and ask and it shall be given. The Creator has answered me so many times. I can't believe it, you know. Sometimes you get the answer you don't want. Now, back after I discovered this thing with the deeds, all of a sudden I became the expert on saving people's houses. That was never my intention, right? I was trying to get out the door and just had offered this to people who had houses. I'm a renter. I don't own a house, right? But so I'd have all these phone calls coming in. And I sat there one day and I said, damn it, God, you know, I can't get anything else done. I just keep talking about these deeds, right? And this isn't what I want to do. I'm trying to get out the door, and I love helping these people, but I'm answering the same questions all the time. I need to get away from the phone for a while. You know, I'm thinking these things. 2 days later, I spent 7 days in jail. Mm-hmm. 7 days in jail.
Yeah. Well, can I ask what happened?
This had to do with my utility bill. They've always been my target, even back in the commerce days, right? I was trying to... If I could get the utility company to accept my payment, then I would figure the rest out from there, right? Let's start with them. That one comes every month.
So you were after accepted for value and other sort of commercial techniques, yeah.
Yeah, look, there's a long story about that on a WordPress site that was set up for me. It's called Rob, R-O-B, Court of Record, C-O-U-R-T-O-F-R-E-C-O-R-D, .wordpress.com. And so I have some of these audios from this early stuff, because I got hours and hours of stuff I did. You know, I spent an hour and a half with two treasury agents based on something I did with the utility early on, where I got the guy to tell me, he said, this is the most intelligent explanation I've ever heard for why a man believes what he believes. I admitted to doing $200,000 worth of instruments. I told him I did every one. You know, did them as a man. You don't have any jurisdiction, brother. And they let me come home. Right, so that's what kind of led me on the path on the things I've done, right? But
so you've
know, that's ancient history.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, where you started, like.
So if anybody wants to know that, it's all been posted on that site, and all I do is send out emails of what I'm thinking or what I'm working on, and this wonderful lady, she puts them on the site for me, and you know, if you want to see what people have done with their property, that's another one called Riders Reformers. R-Y-D-E-R-S, reformers.wordpress.com. And so anybody who saved their house or whatever, they're posting how they did it there, you know, so that you can go, look, oh, I live in this state, this county, this is what they did. I can go save my house.
Oh, great. So you are getting it. All this stuff is being put up there so that people can look at it and make use of it.
Yeah, yeah. But the most universal one to me is obviously YouTube, right, for a couple reasons. I want them to know everything I'm doing, because everything I'm doing I know is absolutely lawful. I'm not breaking any laws whatsoever, and I want them to know I'm coming. Right? So I'm telling you how to take down their system, and they won't take it off of YouTube because it's lawful. Because the system does not care. The law is law, period. Right? And so these same people that you believe are cheating you out of everything that you have are not. You got to quit arguing.
You're cheating yourself out of it.
Yeah. We're our biggest freaking problem. Go look in the mirror. You want to know where the problem is, right? Drop the damn bag of rocks. Drop the hate. And just think about it, because the past is in the past. They tell you that in court. The past is the past. Leave it. If you can't, you're going to live with it forever. And if you're going to go to war, they're the experts on war. You're going to lose.
Yeah.
You know, when you don't have to, man, the law doesn't care. Just point out the other problem. They'll take care of it. Like they told the guy yesterday, bring your evidence. We'll shut her down immediately. You know, almost like begging you, please, brother, bring in the evidence. You know, come on. Somebody get a clue.
So you find that actually, I mean, that people become not only less obfuscatory, but they actually cooperate with you when you start using these sort of approaches.
Listen, a brother told me a story. He's in the recorder of deeds, and he's trying to record his parents' warranty deed using a power of attorney from them. And the clerk says, well, this doesn't have a seal it's supposed to have on his power of attorney. And he said, well, that's a statute law and has nothing to do with me. And she started to act like a counter troll and give him a problem. He said, well, listen, I accept your oath. If you're not the lawful officer, I wish to talk to her. Well, then somebody else came out, and they took him in the back room. And he said, you know, for the record, I accept your oath. I bind you to it. You have a fiduciary duty to me. I don't believe that this statute applies. Her first words were, I've been waiting for somebody to accept my oath.
Wow.
You're right. It doesn't apply. Turn the paper 90 degrees, write on it, this law does not apply, and sign your name, put seal behind it.
So you're actually finding some people who are happy that this is happening as well in the judiciary.
God, yeah, man. Yeah.
Brilliant.
Yeah,
you see, that must be the case, mustn't it, Rob, that as we're awakening, surely to God, the guys that are in the profession must be as well.
These people already know it. They just can't do anything about it unless you bring it to their attention. They're not allowed to come and tell you. They took an oath. They took an oath to the law, and man has free will. If he wants to argue and act like a stupid idiot, he can. We got a system for him.
So when they ask you, are you a resident in the borough, you can either say yes, or you can tell them that you're domiciled in the area.
Yeah.
And those answers make a great difference to the person on the other side.
I tell them, I live in this earthen vessel. I sometimes harbored over here in this domicile, you know, if that's what we want to call it.
Oh, I love that, yeah.
I never leave the vessel, brother. I'm always here.
You know? That's great. I like that one.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You know, I read back in going through this early justification for why to go in this direction in the first place, right? It was out of one of the 1311, 1312, whatever they called them, a conclave or whatever it was back in the day, right? when all the Catholics got together and going to write some laws for people. And one of them in there was to the effect, if an immortal living soul tells you that he is, for you to say that he isn't marks you as a heretic.
Wicked.
And have you read before what the Jesuits think of heretics? Ooh, that's powerful. I want to make sure they know I'm an immortal living soul, and I'm going to make them rebut it because I know they won't. Are you familiar with Winston Shrout? By any chance, you ever hear of him?
I have heard of him, and I've had a quick look at it. Yes, indeed, but yeah. It's very.
Well, you know, he's all into bonds and stuff, right? Which I don't understand at all. But I was early. I was watching those. Winston likes to tell stories, right? So he's telling a story off to the side, and he's talking about he's in court one day, and the judge is being real obstinate, and you know, he's giving it back to him, and he said, "I want to see your oath." You know, judge said, "I don't need to show you my oath." To the point where, you know, where they're arguing, he said there's spit coming out of the judge's mouth, his face is getting red and stuff. And Winston says, well, fine, I just accept it. And boom, like that, he said the guy changed, started acting like a referee.
Yeah, yes, indeed. Immediately. We've heard this over here as well, that accepting and binding him to the oath is really the only way to go. They want a bit of respect, and that's a bit of respect that basically works to your advantage, so it's a kind of win-win, isn't it?
Well, it's a contract. They took a solemn oath to the Creator. Right? They took a promissory oath. Go look that up in a Bible dictionary. Put in promissory oath into Google, and you'll find this old Bible dictionary. This definition will go on for like 2.5 pages of a book that must be 18 inches long, written in a 6 font. You know, I mean, you got to blow up to read it. You know, it's like, man, how did they ever write this thing this small?
And what's that thing called? I'll look it up when we've finished. Promissory oath.
Promissory oath, yeah.
Okay.
But I had just Googled it and then found one of the links to this Bible dictionary, and this was some months ago, right? The gist of it is, they have bound their soul to eternal damnation if they should ever break God's law. And God's law is man has free will.
Fantastic.
Right? So if I don't want to be part of your system, I don't need to be, and there's nothing you can do to stop me.
So, I mean, we're coming up to our last 10 minutes now, but it does strike me that we've been talking a lot about the Bible and how it seems to be the basis of these things. I mean,
well, I'm going to say the truth is written in every religion, period, right? The truth is there. It's hidden with who decides what scriptures you're going to hear and how they're going to be presented to you. Because not all the scriptures are written for everybody. Some are written to the Jews. Some are written to the Gentiles, right? Romans 2:14, you know, that the Gentiles aren't under the law. They're a law unto themselves, paraphrasing, basically. Well, yeah. When he's talking about, when they're talking about the law, they're talking about Jewish law. I'm not under Jewish law. But if I follow the precepts of the law, which is basically follow the Ten Commandments, then I'm a law unto myself. Yeah, that's who I am.
Yeah.
I don't need anybody to interpret the Bible. I don't need anybody to speak to God for me. He's my Father. I'll talk to him anytime I want to. I've been talking to him since me and you have been talking, you know.
And he does provide clues and along the way, doesn't he? The environment.
Yeah, you just ask him. I tell you what, you know, give me the wisdom and the understanding when you've shown it to me, you know, and follow your heart.
Yeah, yeah. And as we were talking about the other night, the Quran also holds a lot of equity, doesn't it? When you look at it, there's an enormous amount of stuff in there which tells you exactly what you need to do. And these are primary defenses, if you like, against officers. Because they're trying to put themselves above you, and there's nobody there apart from God.
Right.
Or Allah, or whatever we want to call it.
Yeah. There's civil law, and then there's law man. You know, that's really all there is. Okay? So I don't need to be under civil law if I can live peacefully as a man. Right? So I'm going to go that way. I don't know what that looks like yet, but I'm going to go ask somebody. I want my name to be written in the book of life. You know? That's my wish. What do I need to do that? Now, Alim, our mutual friend, I wonder what happened to him. I haven't heard from him since he had his meeting. You know, who knows what that was about?
I'm sure we'll find out in time. He's not online a lot, I think.
Yeah,
but that's a very interesting story as well. We'll have a chat about that when we find out, perhaps.
So it is all tied to Scripture. In fact, a retired judge posted on that Rob Court of Records site that what I had uncovered or was trying to undo was a thing that was called the Roman slave something or other. I can't remember the last word, right? It was in ancient Rome. And that eventually people figured it out and they got out of the system. And some of them became senators, you know. But everybody was just classified everybody as a slave.
So
in 1666, they said if you don't show up every 7 years to a magistrate, you're considered dead or lost across the sea, I think is the actual words, lost across the sea.
Written lost to the sea as well, as in the sea in Rome, you know, C double E. Both things, nice pun.
Yeah, so, you know, one guy went in, so I've returned from the sea. You know, I've returned from the dead. And had the court clerk ask him three different times, because three is always a big number in this stuff. They have to get three witnesses against you before they render a sentence, in my opinion, and, you know,
yeah, and you need to deny something three times for it to be effective.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's in all the movies, you know. I mean, you can, when you know what to look for, you start pointing things out in all sorts of crazy ass movies, you know, that they're always telling us one way or the other.
It's amazing, isn't it? Because whilst it does seem to be hidden, once you can see it, it is actually there in full view.
Mm-hmm.
You know, slightly disguised, but it is hidden in plain sight.
I had to laugh. Somebody said, "Rob, have you ever watched Return to Oz?" Right? I said, "No, I never heard of it. A movie made back in the 80s, like a sequel to Wizard of Oz, right?" He says, "You're going to laugh. TikTok is the Vicar General," I think is what he said, you know, and I didn't know. "And the chicken is the birth certificate." And I said, "What are you talking?" So you go watch this movie, and if you kind of have an idea of what these things might be, that's what they are, you know.
Excellent, yeah.
And they're telling the story of going, and Pinocchio is a story of a wooden boy going to a man. He found the loophole in the contract. Every contract has an escape clause. And he was living as a wooden boy, and he became a real, you know, a flesh and blood boy by getting out of the contract.
Wicked. It's everywhere, isn't it?
It is. It is. So, you know, I hope that, you know, people that listen to this, well, just go look at Blackstones, please. You know, I mean, don't argue with it. If they're going to say it's the law, then, you know, learn how to use that. Because it is a book of authority, and so is Coke.
Yep.
And they had great things to say.
You're in good company on TNS, encouraging people to read the old books for sure.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Hopefully in this conversation, we've given people some idea as to what the value of that actually is.
Yeah.
Because
all I can say is stay tuned, because we're moving. We were doing baby steps before. Now we're starting to walk, right? Because people are walking in, like the guy yesterday. He's in there today trying to close a case for his brother before it starts. We're going to see if this works by using the Court of Inquiry.
That's progress.
And if it works once, it'll work again.
Yeah. Yeah, that's definite progress, isn't it? If we get in there beforehand, which is, let's face it, where the administrative technique should lead us. It should lead us to not having to go to court
in the first place. But the key is, it won't matter where it is. You can always appeal every civil case at any point to the King's Bench, and that's all we're going to start. Because we're going to make them say that we're not a living man. If we are, then they can't do what they're doing.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we've just about filled our 2 hours or so, Rob, on this occasion.
Well, cool. Great, Nick.
I've really enjoyed it. I can tell from the chat box as well. There's been quite a lot of comments going through there, so people have been listening to us. And
excellent.
I'd be really great, you know, we can keep chatting on the Skype and on the email, and, you know, get you back when you've made a bit more progress, or when you hear something particularly interesting, perhaps you'd like to come back and tell us about it.
I'd love to, you know. And for those who want to get on my email list, it's courtofrecord@aol.com.
Okay, I'll post that.